Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
The good news is, research is beginning, finally, on one of the most endangered species on the planet, the northern right whale. The bad news is, the research is the result of proposed oil and gas leases being promoted along the reported feeding grounds of the endangered right whale in the Bering Sea off Alaska's western coastline. We launched this in-depth inquiry into one of the most telling battles of our age as an endangered species comes up against an old technology when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wild Side News. Today, we head up to Seattle to talk with Dr. Alex Zerbini of the National Marine Mammal Laboratory as he begins a four-year study of the right whale, which is, without doubt, one of the most endangered species on the planet. Unfortunately, their winter feeding grounds are being designated as the refuge for massive offshore oil and gas installations. There's a giant battle looming as these two titans, one of industry, the other of the seas, face off in the Bering Sea. That's coming up following this week's Nature News. So first, the news. The U.S. Navy was ordered to suspend their use of sonar during submarine training missions off the Southern California coast through 2009. In 1997, states were given the right to enforce environmental regulations off their coasts. This formed the basis for the California Coastal Commission to battle the Navy over their use of sonar. However, in January, the Navy rejected the Commission's rulings based on national security, which were backed up by a Pentagon decision to exempt the Navy from the Marine Mammal Protection Act for 2 years. The U.S. Circuit Court decision essentially overrode the Pentagon's claim of exemption. The case is expected to move on up to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. One of Time Magazine's heroes of the planet was held in jail for 2 months of a 16-year sentence following his conviction for selling naming rights to two monkey species he discovered while working for Brazil's National Institute for Amazon Research. Dutch scientist Mark van Roosmalen planned to use the money raised from the eBay auction to preserve their habitat. Dr. van Roosmalen was released from jail on appeal with backing from hundreds of scientists from around the world who claim that science is being criminalized. Van Roosmalen blames the powerful logging interests and overzealous environmental regulators for colluding to bring about his conviction. Tropical Storm Erin, the first serious storm in the Gulf of Mexico this year, is barreling towards the Texas shore and is expected to make landfall today. A tropical storm warning is in effect for the Texas coast from Brownsville to San Luis Pass near Galveston. Oil workers are being pulled from oil rigs in the Gulf in anticipation of the impending storm. Oil futures rose with the possibility of a hit on oil supplies where a third of U.S. oil is produced. Tens of millions remain homeless in India and Bangladesh as the worst flooding in memory devastates the area. The waters in some areas are beginning to recede, but dysentery is setting in as fresh water, food, and medicine have not reached the vast homeless who have lost almost all of their worldly goods. Meanwhile, in North Korea, hundreds are dead and missing in the aftermath of the worst flooding ever recorded. Early estimates are that 30,000 homes have been destroyed by the floods. The world's largest freshwater lake is approaching the lowest level ever recorded due to severe decreases in rain and higher summertime temperatures. Lake Superior has seen its level drop precipitously during the last decade and has dropped by over a foot in the last year alone. Tributaries to the lake are drying up, and Lakes Huron and Michigan are also down more than 3.3 feet in the last decade. As water levels drop, so too the amount of grain and iron ore, which are barged downriver to the Atlantic as ships must lighten their loads to accommodate the reduced water levels. Bluefin tuna in the Mediterranean Sea and East Atlantic Ocean are nearing extinction because of massive illicit fishing. This according to the World Wildlife Fund. Most of the tuna is being shipped to Japan, where tuna prices can be as much as $15 a pound. A single large adult tuna can sell for $50,000. The World Wildlife Fund has asked the European Union to close bluefin tuna fisheries on an interim basis and the implementation of a strict recovery plan to allow adult fish to mature. And finally, California ground squirrels have a most unique defense against rattlesnakes. When a ground squirrel and a rattler face off, scientists have noted that the ground squirrel will raise its tail and shake it, and this has been an effective deterrent to further attack by the rattlesnakes. Now, scientists know why. Why? The ground squirrel directs blood to its tail, thereby heating it up, which frightens the snake away, as rattlers rely on very sensitive thermal imaging to hunt their prey. The tail of the squirrel can rise by as much as 9 degrees Fahrenheit, which is enough to deter further attack. As a matter of fact, the poor rattlers take on a defensive posture to protect themselves from the hot tails of the squirrels. And that's the news. It's obvious that there are dramatic shifts in the natural balance of our planet. In many cases, such as the unusual flooding, storms, and drought, global weirding is emerging forthwith. As well, the human population has taken a direct toll on hundreds and now thousands of animal species. The story you are about to hear is an indicator of the challenges ahead. We certainly live in the era when the discussions of extinction, mass extinction, some people are referring to, are in the news all the time, and that's because there are many, many, many species that are just disappearing right now as the interaction of humankind and the space and needs that they require, the resources that they draw up, the places that they live that they didn't used to before, and impact are really just trampling over the existence and the rights of other creatures to inhabit their lands as well. And so we hear a lot of stories. Certainly, one of the families of animals that so many people are drawn to are the whales, the magnificent and extraordinary whales, for reasons that are very deep in our souls, very likely. There are some success stories, and there's a lot of effort globally to really protect these animals, but as well, there are some real difficult challenges. And certainly, one of the grandest challenges is the future of the right whales. To discuss this, we're now calling up to Seattle and talking to Dr. Alex Zerbini, who's with the National Marine Mammal Laboratory. Dr. Zerbini, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, Dr. Zerbini, you're a very lucky person because you have the opportunity to really spend your life studying whales. Why don't you give me a little history of your involvement in whale research?
Well, I started studying whales in 1992 in Brazil, which is where I'm originally from. And I work for a museum there doing beachcombing, looking for marine mammal carcasses. Later on, I got a master's on taxonomy, working primarily with minke whales. And in 1999, I moved to Seattle to get my PhD here at the University of Washington, working on mainly on killer whales, minke whales, humpback, and fin whales. And I graduated in 2006. And since then, I've been working for the National Marine Mammal Lab, primarily on population ecology of large whales, including the right whales, which are the main focus of our studies now.
Talk a little bit about what the National Marine Mammal Laboratory, what the mission is, and also who they're associated with.
Well, the National Marine Mammal Laboratory is a government organization within the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and we are responsible for conducting research on marine mammals throughout the North Pacific and especially the Alaskan waters. The lab has several groups working on all sorts of marine mammals, which include seals and sea lions and whales and small cetaceans.
Your focus currently is on the right whales. Tell us a little bit about the right whales, a little bit about their history, and then why it is that they're being so intimately studied right now.
The right whales are one of what we call baleen whales. They are plankton feeders, and they reach about 60 feet in length and weigh approximately 100 tons. The right whales is called right whales because the whalers in early the 17th and 16th century thought that they were the right whales to kill because once they were, first because they were very, very rich in blubber and fat, and second because they were easy to take. They were relatively slow, easy to approach, easy to harpoon, and after they were dead, they would float on the surface, unlike many other whale species that sink after being killed. The right whale floats, so it would be easy to take those whales and then tie a rope around the whale or the whale fluke and then tow them back to land. The right whale was heavily hunted in the North Pacific in the 19th and the 20th centuries, and was in 1935 protected by international organizations. Even though the species was protected in the eastern North Pacific, about 370 whales were killed in the Gulf of Alaska and the Bering Sea by illegal Soviet whaling in the 1960s. The reason we're so focused on this population today is it's because it's probably the most endangered stock of whales in the world. And it has a very, very small population, believed to be between 50 and 100 individuals.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that and what that really means, because that's a very significant detail. At this point, one of the reasons that now there is research is because there are oil and gas leases that are being let out in the Bering Sea, which has direct bearing, at least potentially, on the future of the right whales. Some people are suggesting there have been recent sightings of the right whale in the Bering Sea, mothers with their calves. That's a very strong bond between the mother and the calf, such that people say, well, I think these animals are actually here, because there's not much known about where they actually live and travel. So there is now research going on to determine where these populations are and their habits, and you've been involved in that. Why don't you talk about what's been happening most recently in terms of trying to learn more about the right whales?
This is right. This project that we are starting now this year is actually a four-year project that is funded by the United States Mineral Management Service. And the main focus of this study is to assess seasonal distribution and abundance and movement of right whales in the areas to adjacent to the North Aleutian Basin, which is the proposed area for oil and gas lease sales. What we want to do with this project is characterize the right whale habitat, the foraging behavior, the health, and the prey distribution of these animals. It is very important to do that because this is such a small population and because we know very, very, very little about what's going on with those whales.
Am I right about the fact that the sightings probably are extremely rare? Is that correct?
Yes, they are extremely rare.
Mm-hmm. Because there's so few animals, and as well, we don't have good scientific information about where they are. What do we know at this point about the very few animals that are remaining?
Well, we've had sightings of whales, of right whales, mainly some in the Gulf of Alaska, but mainly in the Bering Sea, in the last at least in the last decade. We know more or less where they go during the feeding season. We know at least part of the habitat. And recently, we had proposed to delineate an area in the Bering Sea called the critical habitat. That's what we know, and we've seen some animals there. We've taken pictures for like individual identification, taking biopsy samples. So, and that's pretty much it. We don't know if that's the whole entire habitat used in the summer for feeding grounds, for example. We don't know where those whales go in the winter, which is probably their breeding season. We don't know which migratory routes they use. We don't know if there are other feeding habitats within the Bering Sea or the Gulf of Alaska. So we know very little. That's what we know.
That's the bottom line, yeah, which unfortunately in this particular situation makes it extremely difficult to know what to do, because if we're going to apply some sort of scientific intelligence at trying to help these animals, we don't have much to go on. Unfortunately, the animals tend to like to, from my understanding, and you know a lot more about this than I do, so I'll pose things, and you can correct me as appropriate. But apparently they tend to like to hug the coastline more than stay out in the deep waters. And this is where, in particular, the possibility of oil and gas leases off the shore within the Bering Sea could come in direct conflict with these animals. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. What we know is that they tend to use more coastal, shallower areas in the Bering Sea. But again, they could be offshore, and we just don't know that because we haven't been there looking for those whales.
Well, let's also talk about, on July 31st, there was a NOAA vessel, the Oscar Dyson, which is a research vessel, that headed out on a quest to try to track down these animals, find them, and learn something. Tell us about that recent effort and what has happened so far.
That's correct. The Oscar Dyson left Dutch Harbor on July 31st to try to locate right whales and then place satellite transmitters on those whales so we could track their movements. The way it works is we have a group of scientists that is doing visual surveys. In other words, they stay on a high platforms on the ship looking for whales using special binoculars that we call big eyes. Those are long-range binoculars. And we also have a team of acousticians which are dropping hydrophones in the water and try to hear right whale calls. So we pretty much survey the outer continental shelf west of Bristol Bay in the Bering Sea, which corresponds both to the critical habitat, the known critical habitat for right whales, and also the North Aleutian Basin lease area. And so we survey those areas looking for those whales. We've completed the first leg of the survey, and we were not able to locate any whales so far.
Well, now that can be analyzed two different ways. One, that, oh, good, these animals don't spend a lot of time in this area. Or someone else could say, my gosh, that could be very indicative. It could indicate that the animals are in critical state of collapse at this point. Any interpretation of that at this point?
Well, we actually think it's still very, very premature to take any conclusions in regards to what's going on to this population. The reason is that we just spent 2 weeks in the water, and because this is a small population, it takes time to locate them. The second thing is they might not be there due to some environmental change in the habitat that has just happened this year. For example, let's say this is an year with different oceanographic characteristics in the Bering Sea, and these features have changed, shifted prey distribution, and then prey somewhere else, the whales are somewhere else, and we don't know where they are now. We haven't been able to locate them. Right. So it's still, and that's actually the reason we are doing this study, and this is why this is a long-term study. You know, we're planning to do this for at least 4 years, is because it takes some time to actually locate the whales and then actually obtain information that will be sufficient for us to tell what the status of the population might be going on.
Mm-hmm.
So we see this as a very, very long term research project. We're still doing the first 2 weeks of this long study. So it's still very, very premature to make conclusions. It is true it's an endangered population, but we still need a lot more information to actually see what's going on.
Just curious, the acoustic microphones, the hydrophones, how far would you estimate you could listen through the oceans? I know the whale song or calls very often carry many miles, but in this particular case, I'm curious what your thoughts are in terms of the right whales and their calls.
It depends a lot on the properties of the water and other features like depth. In shallower waters, you can listen further away, and in the deeper waters, you can't go that far. In the area that we have been working, we believe that we can listen to the whales to distances of 50 to 60 kilometers from the boat.
Now, let's also talk about, in terms of the oil and gas leases, this would be offshore, probably derricks and things. And just the reality is, and we're trying to deal with realities here, first of all, the construction of those and the probably the operation and maintenance of them, it creates a lot of noise, which unfortunately, I don't have the science, perhaps you do, it could affect the capacity for these very few animals to communicate effectively with each other. Any thoughts about the effect of, for example, the construction of oil and gas derricks and how that might affect the animals' communication?
This is not my area of expertise, so I can't tell you much about it. It is true that noise could affect whales in many different ways, including communication. It depends on the level of noise that is created and the distance the animals are from the source of noise. So there is a lot of variables there that you need to assess before you can actually say what the potential impact is. And we certainly can provide more information about the potential impact after this long-term study. But it's still, again, it's still difficult to say what kind of impact we could get on, not only on right whales, but in any populations at this point.
And I can appreciate that. You're saying you don't really know. And
yeah, exactly. We know noise can potentially cause impacts to whales in general, to, you know, marine life in general. I'm just saying we don't know for this particular species, and again, this is not my area of expertise. I'm not an expert in noise and noise pollution in the ocean, so
yes.
I can't tell you much.
Yes. One question that I would have as well, have you been able to see a map with potentially proposed distribution of these oil and gas leases?
We have a map of what is called the North Aleutian Basin lease sales area. Within that area, I don't know whether there are smaller sub-areas where oil exploration or production is proposed for the near term, like within a short period of time.
Part of the process of determining where those wells would go, this is my commentary, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Part of that process would be a sonar soundings, and as it's been fairly well proven that those can dramatically affect ocean mammals in particular. And so I suppose part of the process prior to the letting of the leases would be these massive sonar survey of that area, and that could be difficult for whales specifically. Talk a little bit about what we do know about the whales. For example, I know there's a terrific bonding between the mother and the calf. What are the areas of the right whale that fascinate you the most?
In baleen whales in general, the bonding of the females with the calves occur in the early months of life. You know, after about a year and a half, the calves and the mother separate, and they don't, in many cases, they don't see each other at all again. What fascinates me about this population is that it's small and it's thriving to recover. And we've seen in many other places in the world that heavily hunted populations of whales, like, for example, humpback whales, or even right whales in the southern hemisphere, they are in the process of recovering. So populations were reduced to very, very small sizes, and then today they have shown signs that they are growing, and then they are reoccupying historical areas of distribution, historical whaling grounds. In this particular case of the eastern North Pacific right whale population, we haven't seen that yet. And so what is very interesting is to understand why this is going on. And then this is, I think, one of the long-term objectives of this study is to actually follow these whales and find out why they haven't recovered like other populations in other areas.
This is where the estimates of the population become frightening. Estimates of the current population of northern right whales is, well, again, it's speculative, but somewhere between 50 and 100 animals. That is a frighteningly low population. What are your thoughts about that level of population and its capacity to endure?
That's a good question. It's hard to say. It's very hard to say. It is concerning that the numbers are so small, and the fact that we haven't seen very many right whales in the past. But it is possible that they that they recover, it is encouraging that, for example, we've recently, in the last 3 or 4 years, we've seen females with calves. For a long time, we didn't see right whale calves, and then in recent surveys, we have been able to actually photograph some small individuals. So the fact that we're now starting to see calves, and then we know there are both females and males in the population, is encouraging. But it's still going to take a substantial amount of time. If this population recovers, it's going to take a substantial amount of time for that to happen. And we don't know whether they will be able to recover to the same level of population that they were if they were hunted. But again, it's very difficult to say for sure what's going to happen with the current amount of data we have.
We don't know that much about their literal behaviors. Do we know much about the mating habits of male-female right whales?
Not for this population.
Okay.
And we don't even know where this population goes for breeding.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the basic questions that we're trying to answer with this study.
In terms of this area around the Bering Sea, have males been spotted in that area?
Yeah, males have been spotted in the area, females have been spotted in the area, and calves have been spotted in the area.
Mm-hmm.
This is primarily a feeding area.
Mm-hmm.
Right whales eat primarily zooplankton. And this is an area where they can come and find their prey. And so they tend to spend a substantial amount of time, especially this summer and early spring, these areas,
mm-hmm.
because that's when biological production is higher, and that's when they can take advantage of the abundance of prey. So the Bering Sea and probably the Gulf of Alaska are important feeding grounds for this population. We don't know whether breeding occur there, and it's very unlikely because of the seasonal cycle of this whales. But again, we don't know also whether we don't know where they go for breeding.
How do you intend to now move forward at this point on the research on the right whales?
Well, what we want to do, there's a substantial amount of information that we would like to collect, but it mostly for the beginning of this project, what we want to do is to actually locate the whales and assess their distribution using the the surveys that we're conducting, the ship surveys, or using also acoustics, that is dropping the hydrophones and listening to the whales. And we also would like to deploy satellite transmitters on the whales and track their movements through both the feeding season and the winter, so we can discover where they go.
Apparently, this has never happened before.
No, this has never happened before.
Mm.
We have no idea where these whales go and what they do. We actually were able to locate whales before. We were able to place satellite transmitters on a couple of individuals earlier in 2004, but we didn't monitor those two individuals until they reached their wintering ground. We were not able to follow those whales until they reached their wintering ground.
I see. Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
We were able to follow them for a little less than a couple months when they were still in the feeding ground.
I realize this is not necessarily your job or your forte, but just to whatever degree you wish to discuss this, obviously this is going to become potentially a contentious arena, oil and gas leases offshore in that area and its effect on whales. These are endangered species. If it turned out that 4 years from now you found out that there could be this conflict, do you foresee the possibility that if this truly did have an impact on the whales, that these leases may be postponed?
I think it's a long process, but if it was determined that the oil and gas exploration could threaten this population, there would probably be a lot of pressure to postpone the leases of those areas, yeah.
Right, exactly. Well, that is the way the law is written, and it's there for good purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, unfortunately, particularly a population like this that is so dependent potentially on one specific area, there's always these trade-offs, but
mm-hmm.
quite honestly, the potential extinction of this population
mm-hmm.
of species could be dramatically impacted. Well, let's talk a little bit about what other areas is the National Marine Mammal Laboratory working on that you find interesting that people should know more about?
We are involved in a lot of projects. I think, especially for people in Alaska, there's an interesting project going on with ballhead whales near Barrow, which is another area where oil exploration is being considered, and it's going on. And it's a study that is focusing on movement and habitat of those whales as well. The lab, the studies on killer whales that are very, very interesting too. We are also trying to place satellite transmitters on the whales and locate those whales and see where they go. And if there are shifts in distribution according to different potential prey. We do studies with stellar sea lions, you know, in the past. The decline of stellar sea lions in Alaskan waters was a very important issue. And the lab was deeply involved in assessing were the causes of this this decline and the potential implications of that for a number of activities. We do a lot of interesting work, We do work with polar seals up north near the Arctic, also involving satellite telemetry and habitat studies. We do a lot of things, a lot of interesting things.
Well, you know, I don't know if you, do you have any underwater subs, the submersibles?
No, we don't.
Well, I wish you did, because what you should do is go up into the North Arctic area and plant some flags under. We won't get into that, but that is, there's a such a developing story there. It's an interesting world, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yes. Well, Dr. Alex Zerbini, tell people how they can find out more about the National Marine Mammal Laboratory.
www.afsc.noaa.gov/nmml. People interested are welcome to come and look at all the projects and all the programs that are going on. We have newsletters about the research done not only in the lab but in the whole Alaska Fisheries Science Center. It's a very informative website.
Well, I'm going to keep in touch with you, Dr. Zerbini, to find out how your research is progressing, because this to me is very, very important and also very fascinating.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate that. We certainly would like people to know what we're doing and what the results of our research are.
Well, we'll have an open channel here with the Wild Side News and the National Marine Mammal Laboratory. Thanks, Dr. Alex Zerbini, for adding your voice here on the Wild Side News.
Thank you very much.
I tell it like I see it, and some will say I'm painting a pretty bleak picture, to which I have to say, it just may be that this is just the beginning. If trends in our weather and the diversity of species on Earth continue as they are now, we will be the generation that will witness a reshuffling of Earth's systems to accommodate these changes. Scare tactics? No. I report. You decide. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios. Until we meet again next Thursday or any time on the archives, when your voice of the Earth rings out around the world, here on the Wild Side News.